Welcome to WRTI's Classical Stream, made possible by contributions from listeners like you. Learn more at WRTI.org.
We have another special guest. Crossover is filled with special guests. This one is exceptionally special. Sergio Cervetti, our guest today, composer, is one of them. Welcome to Crossover.
Thank you so much, and thank you for inviting me.
Your work was brought to my attention by someone who champions you and has been acquainted with your film scores for some time.
Mm-hmm.
I would classify you again as a minimalist, an electronic composer. You work with electronic instruments and also actual instruments, I guess.
Yes.
Is that right?
I studied, as you know, with Krenek and Peabody during the 60s. And then at Columbia University with Vladimir Usachevsky, who at the time was a pioneer in electronic music. And I love both medium, the electronics and the instrumental. But I don't know if I could qualify myself as a minimalist. I was very influenced by them. But right now I feel very free. And since I'm old, I think I'm allowing myself to do anything I want.
Well, you're not terribly old, but your ideas are not old at all. And I was astounded to listen to some of your things. You have a very varied repertoire in terms of opera and, solo works and orchestral works. And is this a new album that has just come out?
Yes, Destinations came less than a month ago, and it contains orchestral works by Latin American composers, of which I am one of them since I was born in Uruguay a long time ago.
And you're number one in my book because you're right next to Astor Piazzolla, who is
yes.
probably one of my favorite composers, who also surprised people, I think, in his approach to Nuevo Tango and to the dissonances that were brought in and the rhythmic changes that he used and then the sharpness of the playing. Your Chaconne, is it for Martirio de Atahualpa?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what it is? The Chaconne, of course, is
the martyrdom of Atahualpa, who was killed by the Spaniards after he was made to give them a room full of gold.
Ah.
So they had to kill him because then the Spaniards were thinking that the Indians would start an uprising if he was left alive.
He was a Mexican.
No, Peruvian.
Peruvian,
yes,
okay.
Yes, in Peru, yes. Yeah.
Peruvian. And this, of course, the Chaconne is a classical form of the
yes,
dance.
And to me, it's the most minimalistic classical form there
yes.
is because it's a repetitious bass
uh-huh.
that keeps on going for a long time. So,
which is what you hear in yours, like
yes,
an ostinato
yes.
bass going on there,
and with layers of different riffs that the players keep changing, and some of them are very difficult. And I told them, you may leave a few notes here and there, and then they told me, which notes do you want me to leave? And I said, whatever, just play.
And you have to
really get into the rhythmical feeling of it.
So now, how did you arrive at the subject matter? Your subject matter is very interesting for all of the things that you do, your operatic works and your orchestral works.
Are you talking about this particular
album?
Subject? Yeah. Yeah. In 1992, I was commissioned a concerto for harpsichord by the festivities, you know, of the 500-year anniversary of the discovery of America in Spain, to be performed in Alicante, in the Alicante Music Festival. And I said to myself, well, I have to celebrate the continent where I was born, and not Spain. Spain has been celebrated too long.
Yes.
Let's celebrate ourselves.
Yes. Okay.
So the concerto has four movements, and each of them, it's about the tribes that some of them were totally killed.
Annihilated,
yeah. Yes. And one of them is the Charrua Indians, then the tribes of the Amazon, the Atahualpa's martyrdom, And then the last one, it's a quadlibet with themes of Spanish origin and Latin American origin. And it was a huge success. I got one of the most wonderful reviews in Ritmo magazine in Madrid. But the work is extremely difficult, and I've only had one performance, unfortunately.
When you say difficult to play?
Difficult to play, yes.
Rhythmically or
rhythmically,
note-wise?
Yes.
Or
yes.
All of the above, right?
All of the above.
Yeah.
But I must say that the Chacon, being one of the most difficult, had a wonderful performance in the Czech Republic when we recorded it last June.
Now, this is the Moravian Philharmonic.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
For our audience, Sergio, please clarify where you were born.
Mm-hmm.
And your name is Italian, actually, Cervetti,
yes.
of course, but you were born in Uruguay?
I was born in Uruguay, yes. My parents were immigrants. My mother was French. My father was really born in Uruguay, but my grandfather was Italian from Genoa. And my mother was French Waldensian, or as you say in French, Vaudois.
Okay.
They all came around 1910 when there was a big immigration to the United States also,
and to
South America.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so I had to learn three languages along with Spanish. It's Spanish, Italian, French. And then I came to the United States in 1962.
And learned the hardest of all.
And then I learned English, and not too well, I'm afraid.
No.
But and then when I was composer in residence in Germany, I had a tutor teaching me German. And that was hard.
So,
because you learn languages when you're young, but when you get older,
it's a little harder. Yeah,
much harder.
But of course, the language that you speak, and it's a maudlin thing to say, but is music, and it's a new language that you bring to the world. In a sense, it's as you say, you don't consider yourself a minimalist. But when I listened to some things on the internet that really knocked my socks off, I have
really?
To tell you. But I had a feeling on some of those things that they were wonderful for film as a music bed, you know, for vision, for visual images. So, when did you start writing for film? I mean, what was the whole progression of your career? Did you begin?
Well, I really never wrote anything specifically for film until this is my second project, The Visual Diary. The first one, the guy that was doing it died in the middle of the project, and the project was never, it was called Pornography.
The project?
The project was called Pornography, but it was about the pornography of hypocrisy of the church, and it had its really dark connotations. But the guy died in the middle of the project, so everything was never came to fruition, and I never finished it. And then Oliver Stone found this CD of mine, The Hay Wayne, and he decided to use two of the segments in his film Natural Born Killers in 1994. And he kept telling me, you know, your music is fantastic
it
for
is.
Film.
Yes.
And I said, well, they are not knocking at my door.
Right. So this was the first experience with film, and then you were approached to do this next project, Visual Diary. How did that happen?
So when this friend of mine, Valerie Sonnenthal, requested or commissioned me to do this music, I jumped on it immediately. And when she said an hour and 23 minutes, I said, ooh, my God, how am I going to do that? But after I saw the film, I did it in less than 4 months.
Really?
Yes. It was fantastic. It was one of the best projects.
And the film was, again?
It's called Visual Diary.
Yes.
Yes.
And this is actually a score for a collection of still photographs. 27,000 of them that were made by the artist.
Yes. A series of still photographs that keep on going continuously with some things that are stretched, and then they pick up again the rhythm. The whole film has a rhythm, which I had to follow. And I said to myself, how am I going to end this project? Because otherwise it's just too abstract.
It could go and people, on and on.
It can go on forever. So I said to her, I will do like my own diary, my own musical diary. You do your official diary, I do my own musical diary. And when we'll put it together, so but in reverse order. That is, I begin with the present and I will end up with my childhood. And this is why I end up with this variation.
Twinkle, winkle.
On Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star.
Yes. You use that Lost in Trees segment, which was very interesting. You're kind of redefining what is music, because you're using voices and sounds and speaking in a sense of, in a musical sense, as just listening to what was going on is music. Music, in quotes.
Yes.
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 And isn't it?
Yeah, I do that practically all the time. I like to mix, it's like finding, how do you say in
sound.
French, objet trouvé.
Okay.
Found objects. That's the equivalent of what I do.
You really do it within a very, it's a unique approach. It is somewhat minimalist. I mean, you say you don't consider yourself, but the repetition of the small segments and so on.
Yes. But we should not forget that also, if you listen to my candombe, somebody said, oh, your candombe is minimalist. And I said, but all folk music, folk dance music is minimalist. It keeps repeating a beat constantly.
Well, but the minimalist music can drive you crazy as a musician
because
you never know where you are. You can't listen to it. You have to count, I think, really, because the beat is always moving. But when I heard the excerpt from Candombe, I wrote down on my notes, like glass, very, very minimalist.
Yes.
And again, I'm sure you've been, well, minimalists, I guess, are all compared to with each other, I suppose.
Yeah, I guess we all sound very much like that. And that piece is from 1984.
Ah, okay.
So it's when I was in my formation. And then I rejected a lot of the minimalist aesthetics.
Why?
You know, if you keep repeating and repeating, you're going to sound like anybody else.
Exactly.
So, but I had to, because I got tired of it. I don't want to be put in a shelf with this aesthetics. I like to do everything. That's my problem,
everything,
I guess.
Yeah, well, everything you have, you've done operas.
I've done three operas, of which I am very proud. The three of them have libretto by Elizabeth Etheridge, who is a friend of mine, born here in Philadelphia, and who lives in Bucks County. And we've done Elegy for a Prince, based on the Oscar Wilde fairy tale, The Happy Prince.
Okay.
And she adapted it. And came with a wonderful ending that goes beyond Oscar Wilde. And it was performed at City Opera, New York City Opera.
And when
in
was
Vox
that?
In 2007. Then we did another one, a short chamber opera called Yum, which is about food and friendship.
It's wonderful. And, food and friendship.
It's really a food musical comedy. I'm sorry. A culinary comedy.
That's the way I like to call it.
A culinary comedy. Yes.
Yes. The kitchen is a comedy. But wonderful subject matter. And then the other one is this Abby's Song. Is this
Abby's Song? Yes. It's about a child, a woman, a young woman with Asperger syndrome, and it's an opera in six tableaus each of the tableaus explores a different aspect of this peculiar form of autism.
What brought you to that subject?
I was introduced to it by Elizabeth herself, and I then began to think of myself, perhaps, having a little bit of Asperger syndrome, too.
Which is a form of autism.
It's a form of autism, yes. They are usually highly intelligent people who have problems relating to the outside world and to other human beings. I don't know if you know the music critic Tim Page.
Yes.
He has Asperger's syndrome, and he wrote a wonderful article in The New Yorker about his condition, and also he wrote a book, Parallel something. And I just read it, and it's fascinating the way people with Asperger's syndrome see the outside world. So maybe I do, maybe I don't. I found a few coincidences there that I found extremely intriguing.
Well, intellectually, I guess, your perception of things is what? How do you feel about that? I mean, you're a lot of your subject matter is, as I said to you earlier, very, very profound. It's very, very dark.
Yes. I'm a Scorpio, you know.
No excuses.
Well,
or perhaps the world is dark.
I'm very interested about the subject of death and rebirth. I guess those subjects always interest me enormously. And I also had a near-death experience that really changed my life back in 1977. My heart stopped for 3 minutes, and I had one of those out of the body experience, a real one, and it's exactly the way they describe it.
Really?
Yes.
Which is, you mean the white light?
I didn't see the white light. I began feeling really the presence of loved ones who have left, who were telling me,
"Come on,
relax. Uh-huh. You are among friends."
My
and I
goodness.
Said, "No, I want to go back." And I was given a shot of epinephrine, and I came back. Yes. It was very frightening. Very frightening.
Why frightening? It should have been soothing, isn't it?
No. It was frightening the fact that when I was given that shot of penicillin, I didn't know I was allergic to it. My heart stopped. I had an anaphylactic shock.
Oh, my.
So since then, you know, I am afraid of needles.
but the experience was not a pleasant one?
In the overall, yes, it was what happened when I was in the other dimension, because I believe that there is another dimension.
Yes.
That was wonderful. But obviously, I did suffer something because right now I have a terrible phobia about small spaces and needles, for example. So
loss of control.
Yeah, yes. Out of control for me, it's impossible.
Yes.
Impossible
well,
to live with.
I can identify with that also. I think that people do. It's scary. So in terms of control and in terms of your music and in terms of what you really want to bring to the world is a whole other perception of how we look at things and hear things.
Yes. Thank you.
And you've done it. And I discovered you, and I'm so thrilled, and I'd love to, the joy of bringing your work to the audience is really very, very thrilling.
Well, I'm very proud that you say that. Thank you so much.
This is your newest project, the new release. Now, this is a very interesting album, this Destinations, and then we're going to kind of drop that subject. It's interactive with.
Yes, you can see the scores of all of the pieces there. You have to put it into the computer, into the DVD player of the computer. Yes.
Yes, and then what happens is?
Well, you see videos of the recording session and the scores of all of the works. And what else is there? There are pictures and bios of all of the composers.
I see. So it's a whole new approach.
It's a whole new approach. And I'm very thankful to Bob Lord, who is the CEO of Navona Parma Recordings.
Okay.
Because he came up with this idea. And also, very thankful for the fact that he thought of us, Latin American composers, living here in the United States, with something to say that is different. For example, the work of Ricardo Lorenz to me is fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. He shows such a imagination using the orchestra.
Like, you know, I was listening through the album, and I kind of got a feeling of Carlos Chavez from a long time ago.
Yes.
I don't know. You know, there was stuff going on there in the 50s as well.
Yes, absolutely.
That was already the seeds of what you hear, you know.
In my case, I was very influenced not only by minimalist ideas, but also by the Baroque. This is why I use the harpsichord a lot. I am in love with the Baroque period. I had a teacher, my early teacher, Stefan Grove, was so knowledgeable about the Baroque, and he found in me somebody that responded immediately. So I learned to write fugues, and I showed him, you know, he was amazed that I would be writing fugues so well.
But then what happened?
I began studying with Krennic, and I drifted.
You drifted, and well, because there's a lot to explore, isn't there? But essentially, it always comes back to the same. Sergio Cervetti, we could talk for hours. Thank you so much for finding time to come here and share your wonderful stories with us and your wonderful music.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
The very best.